This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and boy, am I excited for today's episode. It's a lengthy one. I just finished recording with the dynamic duo of the Solid Verbal Podcast, Dan Rubenstein and Ty Hildenbrandt. They were awesome. We went over a litany of content from the Oregon Ducks, which is where Dan went to college, to off the radar Heisman. We had a little fun with scheduling situations. So a whole lot that we got into. So that is a lengthy, lengthy discussion. So hopefully you guys enjoy it. And by the way, continue to email the show. We're at cfbpod@gmail.com. Got a couple of emails I'm going to read here in just a moment. But I want to pose a question that was actually posed by Dustin Sweetelson, host at VSiN. And this was last Saturday. I was finishing up the VSiN weekend morning line. And Dustin, who is from producer extraordinaire to host at the network, and I call him our Jerry Hairston Jr. He's a utility infielder. When he's not doing his night show, he's filling in everywhere. By the way, Dustin recouping from a little knee surgery, so give him some love. I'm sure he'll be firing on all sorts of player props over at VSiN.com while he recoups from a little surgery there. But he asked this question, and I kind of love it. He said, what's the Heisman bet you can't help yourself with? So basically his thought was a Heisman that, you know, it won't happen, but he will tease you. And he gave me two that he has on his radar this year. And that would be Oklahoma quarterback John Mateer. And then he said, oh, and Avery Johnson, because I bet him the last 2 years. And if he's a finalist this year, I'll lose my mind. So I wanted to get the gears going, not only for me, but for you guys as well, as here we are. It's May 21st. We're 100 days away from college football. We have lines, by the way, for all of the week zero games, which we will get to in just a moment. But we're 100 days away from college football, and we all will make bets on Heisman futures that we love at the time. We get a little bit of hope. And as Matt Eumanns likes to tell us, there's nothing worse than hope. And then it eventually blows up in our face. Now, sometimes you might get lucky. I know we've got a listener to the pod, a loyal Indiana fan who had a Fernando Mendoza ticket. There was hope all year long, and it ended up being an easy winner. Or you look at Travis Hunter, if you made the case. I believe the Bear, Chris Felica, had that ticket in his back pocket. But I look back to last year. I think about the long shots that I had a year ago, Damon Williams, Devin Dampier, and maybe it's a cop-out answer, but those probably will be two guys, specifically Devin Dampier. I love his game. I loved his play at New Mexico. It was up and down last year at Utah. Finished strong, albeit against a rather depleted Nebraska team, and it's a bowl game, and we'll talk more about Devin Dampier, but he's a guy that I almost assuredly will have a Heisman bet on. And just kind of looking back at some of the Heisman bets that I made over the years on this podcast, some of them you just kind of laugh at and you're like, wow, I can't believe that I bet, Damon Williams to win the Heisman Trophy. That one really never had a shot. Last year, looking at my Heisman portfolio, I had I had Ty Simpson, 17-1. I think I got that mid-season. That didn't come to fruition. I've had a couple of ones that I thought had a decent shot to come home. Oh, 2 years ago, I bet Kyron Drones 151 to win Heisman. That obviously did not work out well. I had Carson Beck at Georgia at 20-1. Dylan Gabriel 18-1. These were all in 2024. So none of those came to fruition. Honestly, the best two bets that I've made in the Heisman market the past few years have been ones that I've been able to get off. And that was Bo Nix. I got him at, I believe it was 30-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. He became odds on favorite going into the Pac-12 championship game. Had a disastrous Pac-12 championship game, but it allowed me the opportunity to get off and on to Jaden Daniels at minus 140. So I was able to profit from that. Also in that same year, answering this question is kind of funny looking back at the bets that you've made. Cade Klubnik. I couldn't quit Cade Klubnik. Now, I did not bet him last year. He was overvalued, and that would have been a nightmare of a play. But 2 years ago, I bet him at 14-1. That one obviously did not come home. Looking back, I bet Jackson Smith and Jigba at 60-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Cam Rising at 80-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. And also that year, maybe it was 4 years ago, I had C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud, I got at 50-1. He went off before the Michigan game, odds on, and thankfully was able to get off of that one. So, you know, it is worth noting, we'll do more of a Heisman deep dive later on in the summer, but we actually have had long shots hit when it comes to the futures market. Fernando Mendoza, as we'll talk about with Ty and Dan, after week two, and this courtesy of sportsoddshistory.com, Fernando Mendoza was 66-1 a year ago. Travis Hunter, 2 years ago, 50-1 preseason. Jaden Daniels, 40-1 after their week one loss to Florida State. Caleb Williams, late in the season, week 12, you could have got him at 11-1. Really, the only one that you didn't have much of a shot to get off of was Bryce Young. But that said, as I look back in my notes here, Bryce Young, I got him at plus 220, I beg your pardon, to win the Heisman. And C.J. Stroud was the odds-on favorite going into rivalry weekend that year. So there was an opportunity, a small one, late in the season to get in on Bryce Young at plus 220 before Alabama played Auburn and then went on to win the SEC. So as we look down the list, we've actually had some long shots come home. Devontae Smith in the COVID season, 100-1 in the summer, 50-1 in week 14. So keep an eye out there. We'll do more of a deep dive, but I love that question. Heisman bet, you know you can't help yourself with. And that was a great one from Dustin Sweetelson. So if you get some of those, you could tweet me at one Tim Murray, CFBpod@gmail.com. Also, we got one more email, this from Chris Bacon. And we were talking about situational spots, and we'll discuss more situational spots later on in the show with Ty and Dan. But this from Chris, he said, I'm a few days late, but I have a couple of situational spots in the ACC, specifically with Miami. The first is Thursday, September 10th, Florida A&M versus Miami. Chris says, Miami's coming off a Friday night game at Stanford. Assuming they beat Stanford and or convincingly, they will likely be a 50-plus point favorite against FAMU. They will be looking to get the game over with without any injuries. They'll probably have a 30-35 point lead at the half and put the reserves in to get the game over with without any injuries, a road game at Wake Forest the following week on a Friday night. Those are always a worrisome one because, you know, Miami could certainly name the score. They could make it like 77-0. But to your point, it will be a 50-plus point spread. The other one is a pretty good one. He said the second spot is more obvious. October 31st at North Carolina. It's a week before they play Notre Dame. North Carolina won't be as bad as they were last year. We'll see. Miami has always struggled at North Carolina and has a lot more on that game yet. If there is a take, the Tar Heels, has a lot more games than they won since joining the ACC. I don't know if there's a line on the game yet. There isn't. If there is, take the Tar Heels because you won't get a better price. If not as soon as it becomes available, take the Tar Heels. Miami 4-8 ATS in the last 3 years in the ACC road games. Thank you, Chris Bacon. Good stuff there. Once again, email the show, cfbpod@vsin.com. All right. Before we get to a break, just a reminder, continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. We are up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. We are also on iTunes, Spotify. So 5-star reviews very much help us out. A couple more trickled in these past couple of weeks, so much appreciated. And I did get already a couple of guest requests. We are the TRL, the Total Request Live CFB pod. We will do our best if you have guest requests to try to get those guests on. So a couple of guest requests have rolled in, and I think some of them are obtainable. So we will certainly try to do our best. So if you have that, you could either put it in the review on iTunes, or you can email me, as mentioned, cfbpod@vsin.com. All right, quick break. When we come back, lengthy and fun conversation with the hosts of the Solid Verbal podcast. We'll do that next right here on the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised, the gentleman from the Solid Verbal podcast join the program. We've got Ty Hildenbrandt, the pride of Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Dan Rubenstein, quack, quack, the Oregon Duck. Gentlemen, I'll start with you, Ty, my Notre Dame brother, classic Subway alum. Neither of us could get into Notre Dame, so we just cheer for him. How are you? How's the offseason, and when are you going to pay your debts?
I knew this was going to come up. Damn you for remembering about this.
I don't even remember what the bet was.
The bet was Notre Dame, Ohio State round one.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
And I was thoroughly convinced that I don't even remember what the point spread was, but I don't remember if the bet was Notre Dame plus the points or Notre Dame outright. But you and I were texting about it, and I recall you were on the other side of the bet, and I was, you know, high on the hopium at that point because it was, you know, an early season matchup. And you won the bet, and the bet was that if I lost, I had to wear Muhlenberg. And I live, like, so close to Muhlenberg that I could just drive up there at a moment's notice and get a shirt, and I get to do so.
At a moment's notice.
At a moment's notice, just like a bat signal in the sky, I could run up to Muhlenberg and get the shirt, and I haven't done it yet. So,
I mean, this other is a than betting not, podcast. This is outrageous.
It is a betting
I can't
podcast.
I'm allowing you on a betting podcast when you haven't paid a debt in over 2 years.
This is a cautionary tale for everybody listening. Don't be like Ty. Don't be like me. Pay your bets. Be an upstanding citizen. And then you don't got to put up with what I have been putting up with, self-inflicted for the last couple of years. I promise you, God is my witness, I will get the shirt. I will send you a picture. I will tweet something out. It's at the point now where it's accruing interest and you get to tack other things onto the bet, Tim. So this is where we're at. We're going to make sure that this is settled once and for all.
You got to dip into the Murray Pavilion. I assume they named the basketball arena after.
Well, I mean, for those of you watching on YouTube, I mean, don't worry. The jersey, I stole it from the rafters because, you know, they were raising it up to retire. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. It needs to go in the podcast studio. Let's chill out here, folks. You know.
Yeah. No, that probably that career that ceremony
high
of 8 points
went haywire. Versus Swarthmore isn't. You know, I know it gets a lot of jerseys retired. Let's be better. Let's be better at Muhlenberg. But Ty Hildenbrandt, part of 50% of the Solid Verbal. The other, the Oregon Duck, the man who lives in the Midwest, which is Oregon Duck country.
It Dan Rubenstein. Big Ten place.
I want folks, you both have been on this podcast. I think you've been on it together. We've had you separate. Give us the history of the Solid Verbal because this, I've said it all throughout the off season. You know, I am pro college football betting podcast. I listen to about six every week. So you guys are part of the rotation. Give us the backstory of the Solid Verbal and how long you guys have been doing this.
We met at a hotel bar. It was technically Osaka. No. It was outside of Osaka, as chance would have it. No, we were both at Sports Illustrated at the same time. I was doing a video series for SI on campus, and Ty was writing a weekly column, both about college football. I was interviewing tailgaters across the country. Ty was writing a column. I went to Penn State to film an episode. Ty went to Penn State. He sent me a note that he enjoyed the episode, and we just sort of had an email relationship, and this was very early on in the podcasting world. Ty had existing know-how, and we both sort of talked about how there just wasn't a college football podcast out there, a national college football podcast, and like, why not us? And we had, you know, a few contacts through working at Sports Illustrated to have on guests like, you know, Stu Mandel and Andy Staples. And we just started doing it, had a very tiny, minuscule audience, but slowly built it up. We didn't meet each other in person for a couple of years. and did so at a Nebraska football game, and then just kept at it through having various day jobs and homes and living. I was living in different parts of the country. It, you know, started when I was in LA, then living in Brooklyn, and now in the Chicago burbs. And Ty's full time with the show now. What, 5 years?
Yeah, it'll be 5 years. Yeah, 5 years in July.
I'm around the same. I had a day job in New York and then left New York and, you know, did some freelance stuff, but it's been full time for me as well. And we've just been long time podcasters, and the show has evolved over the years, but has been a fun ride.
This is the low light right now. Yeah, this is gonna be, I believe, season number 19 for us.
Wow.
Too. Which I don't like to say often because it really makes us both feel old.
Is that
old,
really true?
That's really true. We started it in 2008. So, season number 19 for us. And yeah, you can count. I've done the finger counting thing 1,000 times. But it's
19.
It's been a minute since we started this whole thing. And as Dan said, podcasting as a word didn't really exist when we spun all this up. But obviously, it's come a long way, despite thinking multiple times over the course of our run here that podcasting was dead. It is very much not. And as Dan said, for 5 years running now, it's been kind of our full-time thing. So we're very fortunate to be here.
Yeah, and the name is kind of becoming extinct, the solid verbal for what it used to mean. I mean, the name is great. It's catchy. You got merch. I'm wearing my merch today.
That's beautiful.
Win your clunkers. We're going to get to that. I have stolen that. I always reference you. Anything that I steal.
That's fine.
I tend to give credit when I steal things. You know, and if someone paid their debts, maybe I would give you like royalties or something like that. But until that day comes, no royalties for you guys. All right.
Did you buy that bootleg outside of a game? Well, like it was one of those sellers, so we don't even get the money.
No, like I have a story for my Solid Verbal merch.
Okay.
I texted my good friend Ty Hildenbrandt because he lives in the state of Pennsylvania. Here in Nevada, you cannot bet on DraftKings or FanDuel. And I needed to get down on a bet about, I think it was the day before Selection Sunday 2 years ago. I thought Alabama's odds were ridiculous to make the playoff. It was plus money for them to miss. And I texted Ty and I said, hey, can you put down this bet for me? I don't know if he put it down or not, but when the bet won, it was a small bet, like 30 or 40 bucks. I said, don't send me the money. Send me some Solid Verbal merch. So I got a t-shirt and a hat, and I love my hat. I've brought that hat on trips. I've sent you pictures from Disneyland wearing my Solid Verbal hat. I've sent it to the from the Smurf Turf when I was doing sidelines for Boise State for the Potato Bowl. So the Solid Verbal hat has been through it. Quality merch. So make sure you go get it. All right, let's jump right into it though. A couple weeks ago, we had on pro handicapper Brad Powers on the show, and we were talking about national championship futures right now. And for those obviously who know, it's kind of a cluster up top, right? It's Ohio State, Notre Dame, Indiana, Texas, Oregon. You could throw in Georgia, those six, right? And Dan, I think you would like this as an Oregon guy. He, at the end of the day, Brad, leaned more so towards Oregon than Notre Dame because of the depth at quarterback. He felt like both rosters were loaded, but he felt like if CJ Carr goes down, it's obleep. If Dante Moore goes down, in theory, you've got a power four starting quarterback as your backup. So where are you on the optimism level for your beloved Oregon Ducks?
Decently high. I mean, look, they make the playoff. They were in the Final Four last season. They don't lose dumb games, which I think is important, or clunkers, as the shirt you're wearing would have you know. So if that's your starting point, that, you know, you have a Heisman caliber quarterback, you have a deep talented defense, you have a coach who has led the team to the playoff the past couple seasons and doesn't lose those dumb games, like has lost to national championship caliber teams these past few years, or the actual winners in Ohio State and Indiana, that even though their schedule isn't remarkably easy, that they've been there before, that they've improved every year, going deeper and deeper into the tournament. I think it's a good bet. I don't know if it's an amazing bet, but it's a good bet, even though you can spin it and say, well, once they've gotten deep into the playoffs, they've been massacred by Indiana and Ohio State these past couple of years. But I'm a big proponent also of, you know, you walk before you run. And so if we are incrementally watching Oregon improve over the course, I mean, they go 13-0 in the first year in the Big Ten and win the conference. If they're prepared for a game come mid-January, I like their chances, but that's a big if. So I think they're a good but not incredible bet.
Ty, I'll spin it to you as we look at the rest of the options up top the odds board right now. Ohio State, you know, we had Bobby Carpenter on last week, and as you would imagine, a bit of a homer, but I think realistic. And the schedule's really challenging. Over-under's 9.5, which is kind of crazy, but you look at the landmines that they have. You've got Notre Dame, Indiana, Texas, Georgia. Of the other five, or maybe it's Oregon, which of those top-tier teams, Ty, do you kind of get a little smile, a little smirk when you think about those teams this year?
Well, I'll stay away from Notre Dame. I don't want to do the jinx thing, okay? If you want to talk about Notre Dame in a different context, then call me, but don't make me do that here. Look, it's hard to go against Ohio State. It's hard to go against Ohio State. And I fully recognize that the schedule is more difficult, perhaps, than we have seen as of late. I fully understand that there are questions about, are they going to be able to get their ground game on track? What does it look like with Arthur Smith? Of course, they lost a lot on defense as well. What happens if you try to give Julian Sain a little bit more license to throw downfield, not just to Jeremiah Smith, by the way, who is catching passes outside of Jeremiah Smith? Like, they have questions, but ultimately in this grouping of teams that we're talking about, the questions tend to shift more towards like, hey, who's going to be the starting nickel corner, as opposed to who is going to be the starting quarterback or the starting running back or wide receiver one. Those are good problems to have, and that's why they're at the top of this list. So I would say until further notice, until something truly breaks in the Ohio State side that seems to me to be truly concerning, there's a reason right now I'm looking at the odds. They're a 6.5-1 favorite, right? Plus 650. And it's because the roster is still loaded, because there's plenty of continuity in place, and because if nothing more, they still got Jeremiah Smith to take the lid off of a defense. So for me, it's a hard bet to go against Ohio State, even though they've got the shortest odds of any of these teams.
Ty, let's look at Indiana here.
Please.
Because, look, this is a team we were going through, and we're gonna go through the win your clunker spots in a little bit. But Cignetti, in his brief tenure in Bloomington, outside of me, maybe the greatest, I think it's the greatest run in the history of sports. Just the fact that they still are the losingest team in football history, and yet they just won the national title. You lose Fernando Mendoza, you lose a bunch of pieces to the NFL, but Indiana's going to win all the games that they need to win. The question is, do they continue to get the elite, you know, play? You got Josh Hoover coming in. Cignetti took a couple of shots at maybe TCU and the offense that they ran. Indiana, I was just looking back, you know, you could have got Fernando at, I think, 66-1 to win the Heisman in week two last year. So the season was underway and you could have got him at 66-1. I think the perception of year one under Cignetti was, I think they're going to be good. I bet over 5.5 wins. I didn't believe they were that good. They make it to the playoff. Year two, okay, they're not going to drop off, but come on. They're not. Maybe they make the playoff. They go to Oregon and win. They go to Iowa and win. They win the Big Ten. They win the national title. Where are you, Dan, year three, Cignetti era? Is it just like, the dude's fooled us 2 years in a row, we got to believe it getting into year three?
I do believe it. I don't, you know, I'm mixed on ceiling. He, in year one, was able to take players that he had developed and was familiar with and had the continuity of the coaches he brought with him, and you couple that with an advantageous schedule. And so I'm not saying they weren't good. I'm not saying they didn't earn a playoff bid, but they beat who was in front of them for the most part, and they go, what, 11-1, only losing Ohio State last year. They're obviously able to build on that with so much of those dudes returning on both sides of the ball, and then you add in Mendoza, who is clearly an undervalued quarterback prospect coming in, and over the course of the season thrived and got more and more confident, won those tight games against teams like Oregon, Iowa, and Penn State, and won the tight games against Ohio State, Miami, take your pick, right? So there is something to Indiana building something sustainable for sure because of Kurt Cignetti, because of the culture there. But we're also now entering into a year with Indiana without a lot of those JMU guys, right? Without Kamara, without D'Angelo Pons, without Aiden Fisher, those like the tent poles of how good they've been these past couple seasons. I think they're still going to be really good. I am 100% not doubting Indiana. I'm just saying, for mere mortal coaches, making three straight years of the playoff, going to, you know, a national championship type conversation 2 years in a row, it's a lot. That's just a ton to ask. The schedule is trickier, although they don't have anybody in the non-conference once again. I absolutely think they're playoff contenders, national championship contenders. I'm not there, but it's just because I wonder what they look like post, you know, the older JMU type guys.
Tim, if I could add one other thing on Indiana, I'm curious to see how they respond to now suddenly being the hunted. Because it was a cute story in year one, and to a large extent, that was still the case through most of last year, right? I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that you bring up Fernando Mendoza, 66-1 after week two, whatever it was, right? There were still plenty of doubters about Indiana, even as we got into the playoffs and people were picking the likes of Alabama or whoever over them. So now that I think the die has been cast, Indiana won the national championship. It's clear what Kurt Cignetti is capable of, whether he is bringing his own guys with him from a previous team or assembling a new cast of characters each year, like he's, you know, done successfully, I think, this year. They're suddenly going to be the team that everybody circles. And so I'm not necessarily doubting Cignetti again. I don't want to be that guy, but it does put them, I think, in a little bit of a different situation than perhaps they've ever been in the history of that program. The other thing that I think warrants mentioning about Indiana, and I know we're going to talk a little bit about schedules and quirks and things like that as we go through this, but like the first six games on Indiana's schedule, they might win a million to like seven. They're going to drill the first six teams on this schedule, but then it gets tough. The last six games on this schedule, Ohio State, Michigan, Minnesota after Michigan, then they're on bye and they close out a home game against USC, a road game against Washington, which I think could be tricky, and then they've got the rivalry game at home against Purdue, whatever. So I just think it's the tale of two halves of the season and definitely the tale of a completely different perspective from the standpoint of everybody else with regard to Indiana and the lens through which they see the Hoosiers.
So you mentioned Washington. I want to get to LSU, but I wanted to kind of keep this organic here. We were exchanging texts, just different thoughts we wanted to hit on in the podcast. And Ty, you brought up, you felt like Washington's schedule was littered with opportunities for them, essentially because you've got tricky spots for their opposition, right? So, you know, they go through a very weird offseason because Damon Williams goes in the portal. They say, hey, we're going to sue you. No, I never wanted to leave. I always wanted to be at Washington.
Who was in the portal? I wasn't in the portal.
Yeah, totally did. I totally want to be here. But they do lose Denzel Boston. They lose Jonah Coleman, two pros. You know, Jed Fish has always seemingly found ways to get more out of less. Damon Williams, another year. So walk me through Washington. And is this a team, Ty, that you think is kind of maybe a little bit under the radar this year?
I love Washington this year. I love them. First off, on the schedule, okay, there are five games that I pulled out that are weird situations that other teams face when they are playing Washington. Week five, Washington is at USC, but USC gets Washington between Oregon and a road game at Penn State. It's a terrible sandwich spot. Week six, Iowa is at Washington, coming off of a game against Ohio State. What else do I got here? Week 12, Indiana is at Washington, coming off of a game against USC. There are like a handful of other ones here that I could go through as well that aren't as high profile. But it just feels to me, whether you're traveling to Washington or they're coming to your home stadium.
Did you mention USC?
I mentioned USC, week five. Okay. Yeah. That's sort of like the marquee one. And I think the one that kind of puts the exclamation point on this. But it doesn't matter whether they're coming to you or you're going to them. There are a bunch of situational plays here that I look at Washington and I say that is not an easy place to play. And this is not an easy team to play for many of the reasons that you described, Tim. It is, I think, a year where we're going to see more stability, hopefully, out of Washington. They've got a ton of returning production that returns, not the least of which is Damond Williams, who I really like. I think this was a defense last year that was good, but they need to get better at causing disruption and wreaking havoc against opponents. Provided they can do that, I think that raises the ceiling a little bit higher. And I just think, given the state of things right now, with the roster that they have in place, despite some of the losses, to your point, Tim, Jed Fish knows how to do this. Like, we make the joke all the time on our show, like, yeah, he's probably going to leave or go to Florida, right? Jed Fish is always looking around. He's always on Indeed, seeing what else is out there. But this is still a pretty good roster despite the turnover. And I think the reason that Jed Fish is able to look around is because he's proven that he's got a bit of a track record for turning teams around and building stability pretty quickly. So I like this team. I think a lot of folks are sleeping on them. And given some of the situations that seemingly are there on the schedule, I think they're going to be, if nothing more, a really interesting team to follow.
Yeah, what they are in their bigger games is going to be everything. I mean, that's everything for everybody, but I think they scored like 11 points a game.
Yeah, they were disappointing last year.
Yeah.
They were disappointing in those games. The Oregon game, the Michigan game on the road, you know,
Wisconsin when the rain.
I thought Ohio State, right? That was kind of like a good spot to maybe trip up or slow down Ohio State, and they scored 6 points. So to your point, you know, travel for these West Coast teams has always been kind of an issue. You know, as we've seen repeatedly with USC, you saw it with Washington. Remember, they beat Maryland, but they needed a crazy comeback to win that game. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a thing too with Washington this
but
year.
But here's the thing about that. Of their road games, they travel to USC on the West Coast. I believe, and I could be wrong about this, they're two farthest trips east are Purdue and Michigan State, neither of which I think, well, we haven't got to any of these teams yet, but I'm not under the assumption that any of those are going to be Goliaths. They travel to Nebraska and then they stay on the West Coast. They've got their game against Oregon. So it's not like we're talking about zigzagging the country week in, week out. I mean, all the West Coast Big Ten teams have a fair amount of travel in front of them, that's for sure. But I think even that sets up decently well for Washington, given circumstances.
No, I don't disagree with that. You know, and once again, you know, I opened up the show with a question that was posed to me by my colleague, who is going to be that Heisman bet that will tease you, that you love, but will never get there. And I bet Damond Williams last year. I'll probably bet him again just because I love his game. And you know, the schedule's fascinating. You know, Dan, is there a team that you look at in the same ilk, like Ty looks at Washington? Is there a team that is seemingly floating under the radar that maybe not national title, maybe playoff discussion, but going to get some big wins? Is there a team that kind of tantalizes you?
I mean, tantalize is a strong word.
It is a strong word.
I'm tantalized and titillated by very few things in my older age. I like the potential of Texas A&M. I like teams, again, I say this every offseason, especially in preview season. If you're starting out with defense, coaching, and a quarterback, obviously don't love what Marcel Reed was able to do in some of the bigger games last season. You know, you're allowed to grow, you're allowed to progress during the offseason and get better. I really like Mike Elko. I really like this defense. You can point to the fact that they played a lot of bottom tier SEC teams last season, and that perhaps inflated their schedule. They won those games, and not everybody does that. And so that they were in the playoff, that it's been so difficult for so many coaches to consistently break through and improve a team in College Station. I think Texas A&M is likely my answer, where they're just floating far enough away from the top tier conversation. They traveled to LSU early. They have Bama on the road. They have Oklahoma on the road. It's not by any stretch an easy schedule. They also have ASU, whatever ASU is, this season, and that's at home. But there is something to me about what they return on both sides of the ball, the steps that they've taken, especially in terms of offensive skill. Now, obviously, you know, a guy like Casey Concepcion taken in the first round, you know, they lose some of that pop, but they've been recruiting really, really well. They've been developing and recruiting. We'll see how they do. I think it's Holman Wiggins taking over the offense after Colin Klein left. I don't know. Trusting Mike Elko to get the best out of his players is a pretty good bet. So they seem like they could be one of those teams, not quite there record-wise to make the SEC championship, but sitting there once again at like 10-2. And you're just like, oh, right. Yeah, I guess Texas A&M should be in.
Yeah, there's go ahead, Ty.
I didn't mean to cut you off, Tim. Can I give you another team?
Please.
That I think is, I don't want to say borderline playoff. I think that's too strong. But this is a team that will definitely have an impact on teams that do qualify for the playoffs. They'll be able to shuffle the standings. That is the Florida Gators. I am gung-ho on the Florida Gators this year. They have a ton back, both on offense and defense, despite the fact that there's turnover with the new coach. I think they've got the most returning production on defense of any team in the nation, and they're top 10 overall nationally in terms of what is coming back. This is a really good roster. A really good roster, and I think people are going to get lost a little bit in the fact that it's a new coach, a new quarterback, and it's probably going to look different. And we tend to, like, for whatever reason, gloss over those teams. But perhaps we should have learned our lesson in this age of the transfer portal and how you can reboot a program quickly, because John Sumrall, I think, has done a really, really good job. He's retained guys that matter. He's brought some other guys in that I think can make a real impact. And there are some heavy hitters on the schedule. It's a typical Florida schedule where you look at it and you say, there's no way they're going to go like undefeated or even 10-2 against this. But you're looking at a schedule that's got Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, Florida State on this late. Who knows what state they'll be in? Ole Miss, they get a week after a really big game against Lane Kiffin in week four.
Good spot.
So like, I just look at the schedule and I look at this team and I say, this is a good roster. This is a coach who seems like he's kind of a maniac, who's definitely going to be able to get them fired up. And it's a schedule that's got a lot of ammo on it that, you know, if they dump one or two of these teams, it's suddenly going to reshape what we think we know about the 12-team field come the end of November. So I'm pretty excited to see what they look like in 2026, now out of the shadow of Billy Napier and, you know, whatever's been going on the last couple of years.
Well, I am happy that Sunbelt Billy has returned to Sunbelt land. It's important
natural habitat. Yeah,
for this podcast, that Sunbelt Billy is back in his homeland of the Sunbelt. But
like when an orca's released to a fjord after captivity, you're like, well, that's a nice story.
You didn't belong in the SEC or the American. You're back the Sunbelt, Sunbelt Billy. Come on now. But I'm glad you brought up Florida, because you know we're gonna do a draft later on here, Heisman draft. And Aaron Filo was a guy, when he would step in, when Haynes King would always inevitably get hurt, you'd be like, oh, that guy's pretty good. Yeah. It's like, hey, he's pretty good. Like, who is that quarterback this year? Because I've got one that I don't want to say it because I want to save him for the draft. But there's a quarterback that it's like, oh, yeah. Like, you could talk, Ty, Kenny Minchie going to Kentucky, Aaron Filo going here to Florida. Lincoln Keenholtz going to Louisville.
So you're talking about a backup now getting a starting role as a transfer?
Yeah, so like, okay. I've been calling it the year of the quarterback, because you look up and down at CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Julian Sayin, Dante Moore, Trinidad Chambliss, but there are going to be those guys that didn't get their shot somewhere, and now they're the starter. So maybe Aaron Filo, Ty, is that guy for you, but is there a quarterback, I'll start with you, Ty, that jumps out as like, didn't get his opportunity and is now going to shine? Because that's what the portal used to be, and now it's completely different, right? Then now you get guys who are shining and go shine brighter, bigger places. But there are those logjam spots where guys go and end up playing well. So is there a quarterback that intrigues you this year, like an Aaron Filo down in Florida?
Well, mine is a cop-out, and I don't think there's necessarily an apples-to-apples thing for this guy. I know there isn't, but I'm thinking of it more from the perspective of going to a bigger place.
Byron Brown?
Getting a bigger state. I love Byron Brown. I do.
Kenny Minchie finally playing at a real school than a conference?
Look, my answer is boring, and it probably doesn't even really meet the spirit of what you're going for, Tim. But I'm just really excited to see what Drew Mestemaker looks like on a bigger stage at Oklahoma State.
That's fine.
Because I actually think Oklahoma State is going to be much better than people expect this year. And certainly, they're going to put up points with the Eric Morris offense, bringing over the three-headed monster. It's not just Drew Mestemaker, but also a running back, a wide receiver. They're going to put up points in a really significant way. whether they play defense ultimately will determine their ceiling. But I like the story of, you know, whether it's Mestemaker, you mentioned Byron Brown. He's another guy going to a bigger place who, you know, on the grand stage of the SEC, let's see what he can do. Those to me are always interesting. They're never not interesting. And so that's where my mind goes first, even if it's not exactly what you're looking for here.
I mean, look, bigger stage, the bigger stage answer would be Josh Hoover for me. Going from TCU, where he's started, he's played a ton of games. He's been a starter, so this doesn't fully meet the Philo threshold. But Josh Hoover comes in and immediately has huge expectations to take a playoff team, defending national champion, back to the at least the playoff. In terms of guys who are like finally getting their shot, I think Kienholz isn't a bad answer. I think because obviously, Jeff Brohm has a quarterback-friendly reputation and is now, you know, a third transfer quarterback in 3 years after Tyler Shuck and Miller Moss. Lincoln Kienholz has had as good an offensive development opportunity at Ohio State as anybody in the country. Hasn't really had time to play in meaningful action. But I don't know. There's enough there. The running game should be there to assist him in the transition. He's old enough and is, you know, has an understanding of what the standard is, a major program. Louisville's schedule is pretty great in the ACC. I think what they open with Ole Miss, but after that, it's, I don't know, it seems fairly manageable. I'm totally good with Lincoln Kienholz as an answer here. The return of so many quarterbacks actually makes this question kind of silly, and that's on you. It is an interesting exercise just because, you know, you're hoping for whatever brief we saw from like Steve Angeli last year at Syracuse. We're like, oh, he came in and is clearly an upper, you know, third power four type quarterback before he got hurt. So I think that's my answer. Lincoln Kienholz and a shade of Josh Hoover.
All right, well, let's do, we're going to call this Hey, Remember Me, because I started this, the podcast with this, because Nico Iamaleava, prior to the start of the 2024 season, granted he was at Tennessee, he was 15-1 to win the Heisman. He got down to plus 750 before he, you know what, the bet against Oklahoma on the road, and then he eventually would get benched. In that same season, I think I've told this story on the podcast. In that same season, Avery Johnson, Big 12 Media Day, was here in Vegas. And I had some blogger who maybe had a couple of pops in the Circa Sportsbook come up to me and said, tell me how Avery Johnson doesn't win the Heisman Trophy. I was like, well, there's lots of reasons why he won't win the Heisman Trophy. And if I remember correctly, he did not. And then last year, Avery Johnson was 40-1. Now, Avery Johnson is 125-1 to win the Heisman Trophy at Circa. But he's still playing college football at the same school, right? You could even, as crazy as it sounds, like Kevin Jennings, I think, is a, hey, remember me over here? Huh? Like playoff quarterback 2 years ago. So it's the year of the quarterback, but you look up and down. Noah Fifita is still at Arizona. Like, it's pretty wild. So, Dan, I'll start with you. Who is the nominee for Hey, Remember Me in 2026?
That's still around?
Still around. Yeah, he's still quarterback. Anthony Calandria, Virginia, UNLV. Did you know he's the quarterback of Nebraska?
Yeah, Dan and I were just texting about Davis Warren yesterday, who apparently is going to be playing
Warren
at Stanford.
At Stanford, that's a good answer. Oh, man, this is a good question.
Ashton Daniels will be the quarterback of Florida
State
this year?
Yeah, who is just competent enough to know that they don't have an NFL future? And will sue the NCAA to make sure that they can. Is TJ Finley still eligible?
I think he tried.
I want to say, you put me on the spot. Who is still eligible after all these years?
Or just, I mean, it doesn't have to be like, it doesn't have to be like an obscure one. Just a guy that you're looking forward to playing this year. Like, I honestly, all kidding aside, I am intrigued by Avery Johnson this year. Colin Klein comes back. You know, it's year three. There's no expectations. Like, there was so much hype, right? They let Will Howard walk and go win a national title and get drafted by the Steelers. for this guy, and he's shown glimpses at times, but now it's kind of like, oh yeah, that guy. And that's where sometimes as a bettor, I like to look at, you mentioned Steve Angeli. He's kind of a hey, remember me, because he was balling before he tore his ACL, and then Syracuse put in a lacrosse bro to play quarterback. So like, things went very south quickly, but like, I don't know if Syracuse is going to suck this year if Steve Angeli is a decent quarterback. I mean, they went on the road, they beat Clemson a year ago. So I'm just thinking of like guys that could end up having decent years, but we kind of forgot about because the hype, the star, kind of lost its light.
Well, here's a few, okay? And right. I'm not speaking to this necessarily in terms of, yeah, this guy is somebody I would bet on for the Heisman.
Yeah, just good quarterback.
Jackson Arnold going to UNLV. I feel like we have all experienced a long, painful journey with Jackson Arnold, where he came in as like a five-star to Oklahoma. He looked really good in very limited action early on in his career. Then he got the yips and sort of lost his mind, went to another school, lost his mind, didn't play. And now here we are, where he's going to be at UNLV. Can he run the ball? We know he can run the ball. Does Dan Mullen like to run the ball at UNLV? Yeah, that could be interesting.
Yeah, I like it.
There's a name. Darius Taylor for Minnesota is, it just feels like to me he's been there forever, even though I know that's not necessarily the case, but that's a name that maybe because the Minnesota people that write into us always talk about Darius Taylor, I feel like I've been hearing his name for 10 years. He's another one that jumps out to me. Another name that I think is sort of interesting in that same vein, Billy Edwards Jr.
Man, yeah, North Carolina.
UNC, baby.
I feel like Billy Edwards Jr. has been around so long that it should be Billy Edwards Sr. Like, he has just always been there. And even, you know, he's probably even got some eligibility after this year, if memory serves. So there's another name for me that jumps out. We like to do this often on our show where we'll just be like, hey, you remember so-and-so? Mark Fletcher feels like he's been at Miami forever.
Mm-hmm. He does have an old man name.
He does. He does. And maybe
like
that's
Mark
got
Fletcher
something to do with
Mark Fletcher has cut
it.
My hair since 1993. Yeah.
And one other name that I'll throw out here, and it's not because he's so much under the radar in any sense of the word, but I just feel like we have been waiting forever for Cam Coleman to actually show his ceiling. You know, last year he was a focal point to some extent of the offense. The offense, the team was kind of a mess, inconsistent. He had his fair share of drops. Obviously, Texas went out and they splashed the pot to try and bring him to Austin this year. And we'll see what he can do with Arch Manning. But I think it would be a cool story if after all these years, we finally get to see all the hype around Cam Coleman when he first joined college football.
All right. I like it.
By the way, I have a name for you that's a star level name that seems like he's been a starting quarterback forever and has yet another year of eligibility after this one. Lenoris Sellers is still young.
Yeah.
Lenoris Sellers redshirted, will start his third consecutive season this year and has another year. That blows my mind. The name I thought of is not a starter, by the way, that I could not believe is still a college football player. AJ Swan is still available.
Really?
I think he's at Mississippi State. Showed out for a couple weeks at Vandy.
Yeah.
I think went to LSU and App State and is now a backup at Mississippi State.
No, I think the point you made about Lenoris Sellers is a good one, too. I felt like last offseason, we were just craving any quarterback. Like, who could we find, right? Because all the top teams, most of the top teams had newbies at quarterback. And this year, I do feel like, I'll give you another name. And I think it was mentioned on the podcast a couple weeks ago by my buddy Duck, Joshua Nunn. CJ Bailey at NC State. There's a lot of, like, hey. And here's the thing, right? Miami feels like they're a cut above than everyone else in that conference. But like, it doesn't it feel like number two, number three is wide open in that conference this year?
Oh, yeah.
We just talked about it this week. Dan's comparison, I'm not going to take credit for it was a vacated mall or a mostly vacated mall with a particularly vibrant Chili's, which in this case would be Miami, and then just a bunch of empty lady footlockers. That is the ACC right now.
And there might be interesting kiosks to grab your attention here and there. I think I said with like a remote control helicopter or a drone or something that pop up. You're like, oh, what's this all about? But yeah, this is the first time Miami has been the sole and clear hunted in the ACC since Mario Cristobal arrived. You know, previously it's been like, oh, Clemson went to the playoff last year, or Florida State went undefeated last year, and they're bringing in DJU, and Mike Norvell will work his magic there. Spoiler, he did not. But there is something about Miami this year where it's just like, oh, it's just us, I guess, in terms of the playoff, the teams that are considered to be obviously playoff caliber.
When was the last time you guys went to a mall, a real mall? I actually have a story. So my son needed basketball shoes, and someone told us to go to Macy's, and I'm like, it still exists? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we went, we bought him basketball shoes, Shaq basketball shoes.
Nice.
And I look at him, I'm like, are you hungry? He's like, yeah. I'm like, let's go to the food court. And on the way to the food court, we found our next dog. So
really?
Who is that dog adoptions agency thing going on? We walk out into the corridor where all the, you know, Foot Lockers and Champ Sports used to be, and they had an adoption agency or adoption event going on, and we found our new dog. So first time my shooting percentage at a mall in Vegas is 1-for-1. I found a dog.
Wow.
In my mall.
And found a dog in you. Yeah.
And got Shaq sneakers. Huh. And went to the food court.
What'd you get at the food court?
I think I got Chinese food because you have to, okay, right? At a food court? I mean,
that's pretty good.
There was a Cinnabon. The Cinnabons are still hanging on.
They, at the malls here, one of the malls I've been to relatively recently, they basically turn the huge stores, not the department store level, but like the bigger stores. There is a company that turns them into like turf fields and basketball courts, and they just have kids' birthday parties and sports leagues in there. Because there's so much room, and I think it's pretty brilliant, right? Especially in the Midwest, where you got to be indoors for a stretch of the time because of weather. There's like a chain of places that takes over. I think they were looking into rezoning to turn like some of that, the area of these malls, to like pickleball clubs, which I think is brilliant. I think it's great. You got to get people moving inside in the winter. But yeah, I don't think the appetite for Wilson's leather is quite where it was in 1996. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't know the leather industry.
I tell you what, my stock of Sam Goody is at some point going to come home. We're going to get a resurgence of Sam Goody.
Back of 2029, maybe the warehouse.
CDs are coming back one of these days.
I mean, look, vinyl came back.
That's true.
It's only a matter of time before people get everything. Baggy
jeans are back, Tim. Have you seen
baggy
this?
Baggy jeans.
Look, I was telling you guys about a company that sells bar hats and circle hats. Those were what we used to rock going to the mall back in the late 90s. All right, before we get to a couple things that I wanted to hit on here, LSU, Ed Orgeron being back. Are they just, Dan, I'll start with you. Are they just fully embracing the evil empire? Because I know you guys are a college football pod. I mean, what Will Wade is doing, we're like moments away from Will Wade trying to convince LeBron James to play for LSU basketball.
Sure.
It's hilarious what they're trying to do, but it's like, we don't care. We just, we'll do whatever needs to be done. I kind of love the addition of Ed Orgeron. It's kind of fun for the sport. And honestly, all kidding aside, he's a dynamite recruiter, sucks as a head coach. So why not? They have a relationship like they did at USC. So what are your expectations of LSU, and are they the new evil empire of the sport?
It kind of seems that way. There are cases for a couple of different teams, but LSU combined with Lane Kiffin, I guess combined with Will Wade, combined with the women's basketball situation. Yeah. I happen to love Kim Mulkey's clothing. I don't think she's like my first choice to be like my emergency contact. I don't think she would be dependable in that way. But it's good to have villains. It's good to have teams and programs you root against. I think Ed Orgeron's approval rating is pretty high in the sport.
Yeah, I agree.
I think people like find him to be charming. I actually don't think he was a horrible head coach. I think he was perhaps not fully focused as a head coach. He did win a national championship. He was the head coach of the offense that has perhaps been the most dominant of the modern era. There's a lot to like. And he has this, he has obviously a long-standing relationship with Lane Kiffin. So it's not out of nowhere with regard to coaching with Lane or being part of Lane's program. He's done that at Tennessee, USC, whatever. And it's very, very hot right now to bring in a disgraced recent former head coach with what, Brent Pry back at Virginia Tech. Well, I'm missing another big one.
What's his name? The Clemson OC is back, right?
Chad Morris is back.
Chad Morris is back. Yeah.
But he did a good job for Clemson before he left SMU. I'm forgetting somebody else who was brought back. But I think it's fine. I think that he's going to steer into what he is, which he's going to be like an ambassador and help with recruiting with prospective LSU kids coming in. I'm totally good with it.
Ty?
Yeah, I think they should just embrace it, Tim.
I think they are.
Just go with it. You know, like, especially in this era now where it truly is dog eat dog. You don't go out and get a guy like Lane Kiffin without basically signing up to be the evil empire of some way, shape, or form. And so just go with it. You know, if the plan in college football and if the plan at LSU is win at all costs at this point. Spare no expense, get the job done, get the natty, and we'll figure it out later. It's not the worst place to be where you're sort of the bad guy and you're sort of the hunted in a sense that you're trying to pick off the best players and you're trying to build a roster and the intent to your fan base is clear that you're going to do whatever it takes to win a national championship. I think a lot of SEC schools would look at that and say, this is the template we want to emulate.
So
regardless of how it comes across, from a narrative standpoint, I'm sure the fan base is going to be all about it until they lose a game or two. That'll be a different conversation. But at least as of now, if you're a fan of the team, you look at what they're doing and say, all right, well, the intention is there to make this thing real. Let's see what happens.
So I'm wearing the shirt, win your clunkers. I am a big, big believer of situational handicapping, especially in college football. And we opened up the podcast last week going through the Big Ten. We did a little bit of the ACC, and Ty, you hinted at a game that is going to be a massive letdown, you would think. Ole Miss, week 3, prime time, game day will be there. I think it's the most anticipated regular season game of the whole year. I mean, everything going into it, the comments he said, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever they were. So you got a prime time game in Oxford. The following week, as Ty, you pointed out, you got Ole Miss going to Florida. So I've got a couple of spots, and I want to hear some of your win the clunker games, and we can kind of just rotate through them because I know you guys did this recently on your pod. But the one that jumps out to me, I was listening to Bud Elliott's Summer School over at the Cover 3 podcast, and they had on the BYU beat reporter. And they were discussing the October 17th game when they host Notre Dame. And the beat reporter said this might be the biggest game in 20-plus years in Provo. So I'm like, okie dokie, let's go look at who BYU plays the next week. They have to go on the road to UCF. So you've got the furthest travel in that conference, always kind of a weird place, the bounce house. UCF seemingly is down. Win or lose against Notre Dame, there's going to be so much built up into that game. So to me, that's one of the primo spots of the entire season, BYU off Notre Dame against UCF. So Dan, give me a couple win your clunker games.
This is me talking semantics here. A clunker game could happen to anybody,
sure,
right? Winning your clunkers is just like a bad performance that you're able to pull out. So it doesn't have to happen to a good team, bad team, whatever. Just you got to win your clunkers. Winning is better than losing. UCLA has an interesting one at the end of the year. It's a sandwich spot for, I think it's Michigan. Michigan has UCLA after Oregon and before Ohio State. And the reason I circle a game like that is UCLA, at their worst, was truly abysmal last year. They lose to New Mexico, a pretty good New Mexico, actually.
Yeah,
but they lose to New Mexico
early. Mexico, mind you.
Correct.
Hammered.
The Lobos, yes. So I like to look at perhaps a team that was bad last year, that perhaps a team beat badly and maybe takes on again later on in the season when they're maybe beat up and they're just sort of saying, oh, like we beat UCLA last year, or we beat Oklahoma State. Look at like what Oklahoma State perhaps has on their schedule late in the season next year. And I think this was true of a team like Arizona, who was abysmal 2 years ago. And then last season, you know, they hired Danny Gonzalez. The secondary is nails. And I'm not saying they took teams by surprise, but they were basically played BYU evenly in Tucson and actually should have won that game. So that's like a terrific instance of BYU winning its clunker.
We here on the VSiN College Football Podcast would like to strike that game from the record because somehow Arizona did not cover that game.
They didn't cover the game.
Oh, God. There was a fumble that like kicked off a foot. Oh, my God. It was awful.
Yeah,
especially ESPN game. Brutal.
So Oregon travels, like I'm not high on Michigan State at all. Oregon travels to East Lansing, but it's after Ohio State, Michigan, and before Washington. So there's just those spots like that. Like if Pat Fitzgerald and, his staff are able to get Michigan State to just feisty by the end of the year, that's one of those teams that like they've been largely trashed these last couple years that you look at November and maybe that's a game that gets Michigan State bowl eligible, or that's just, you know, it's a headline game coming
last
to
last home game of the season,
to
too.
Last home game of the season and a headliner, right? If you're a Michigan State fan, you're like, oh, yeah, let's give everything we have. It's the Oregon game. They were in the playoff last year. So there are those matchups like that. I would take a look at, and every year you take a look at who was best against the spread, and it's typically teams who in the previous year were god-awful, and Vegas is skeptical for half of the year, and you get some nice lines as this team is clearly improving. So I would look at the awful teams, like Virginia Tech would be a team, especially later on in the season. Like, Virginia Tech's going to be better this year. That would be a team that you look at later on in the season where, like, you know, maybe an ACC opponent, they're like, just like, well, it's they've been terrible lately, so we'll be fighting against Virginia Tech, and they eke by 31-28.
I'll give you one, Ty. We haven't talked about your alma mater. Penn State. So Penn State on September 26th plays Wisconsin. Because of their joke of a non-conference, they will probably be 4-0 if they beat Wisconsin at home. They host USC. And then I know the talk of Chicago, you know, forget what's happening right now with the Cubs because they just got swept by the Brewers or the White Sox. You know, the talk is Northwestern's new stadium. So Friday, October 2nd at Northwestern, I would just say to Matt Campbell, be ready. You know, that seems like a buckle up weird spot, doesn't it?
Penn State's had fits with Northwestern in the not so distant past. So opening a new stadium Friday night, Dan and I have talked about like getting together and going to that game since he's relatively close. That's one that we've had circled for a while. Not because I'm thinking upset, but I just think it's an interesting situation for many of the reasons you outlined. It's not a game that anybody should overlook, and especially since it has the stage, you know, and all the circumstances around it. That should be fun.
I'll give you something tasty. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
I love the travel dynamic that we have with these insane conferences going across the country for games. And we talked about this on our ACC episode. I don't know how good Cal's going to be. But if you're telling me that Clemson, complete unknown, kind of falling apart as a program, it seems, last year, a couple years before that, they had a nice blip a couple years ago. But you're telling me Clemson, new starting quarterback, new offensive coordinator, replacing major pieces up front on defense, gets North Carolina and LSU in two of the first 3 weeks. And then short week road travels across the country to play at night at Cal, who should have a fun offense. And they're kind of an unknown with all the new coaches and all the new transfers on both sides. I'm not saying it's a clunker position for Clemson necessarily. I'm just saying it's a bad position for Clemson situationally that I'm paying attention to early on.
Well, and sometimes you got to look at those spots and then let's compound it over. So Cal plays Clemson on a Friday night. It's probably going to be ESPN, 10:30 Eastern. We're all going to be watching.
It's a body clock situation for Clemson, too.
It's a great spot to back Cal, probably as a short home dog, maybe as a small favorite. We'll see how the first couple of weeks go because Clemson is a double-digit dog week one. And you're going to hear the name Jaren Chiave Sangapulateli just thrown around everywhere. Next week, they come to my hood and take on UNLV. So an opportunity for UNLV. You already mentioned Jackson Arnold. They're going to be one of the better, you know, group of five teams in the country, and they're going to have an opportunity to beat a power conference team, maybe off of a Clemson win. So it kind of like cascades it around. So that's always the fun thing when you look for some of these, you know, situational spots, because I think Cal's going to be interesting. And Dan, you could speak to it a little bit better than most with Tosh Lupoi coming in from Oregon. You do have a first-time head coach. I love the fact that they kept Rolovich as the quarterback coach. There's a relationship there with JKS. But, man, they're going to be fat and happy if they win that game against Clemson, because even if Clemson stinks this year and they stunk last year, all things considered, it's still Clemson. It's still a team that won multiple national titles in the recent decade. So I think if Cal wins that game, that following week will be a primo spot to look at a group of five team that is going to have a lot of talent and is going to be led by, as you know, Ty, you already mentioned, a former five-star quarterback in Jackson Arnold.
Look, if for all the people out there who have too much money and you're looking to gamble and wager with Jackson Arnold in a decently big game, vaya con Dios. Good luck to you. I think Cal is intriguing. So it's Tosh Lupoi. It's obviously his coordinators don't have a ton of experience calling plays. Younger guys, they bring in the transfers that they bring in on both sides of the ball. They have a bunch of Oregon transfers. So if Oregon's third string dudes from last year are intriguing to you, I mean, they should be, right? It's a good place. And Tosh Lupoi has not just coached under Dan Lanning, but obviously coached under Nick Saban, guys like, I want to say Jeff Tedford when he was at Cal. He was at Washington. So like he sort of has an idea of the standard and the types of players that are needed to win and the type of recruiting needs to have that needs to happen to win. So I'm not positive what their ceiling is. There's a lot of quality on this schedule, as I think you alluded to with UNLV, not just them, but you look at the back half of the schedule, it's sort of week in and week out. But before that travel grind really sets in, I think there's something about Cal as well. So yeah, I'm decently high on them.
One more game I'll mention. We've talked about this team a little bit on this podcast. I think UConn lost a really good coach and hired a pretty overrated coach. I think Jason Candle, for what he was able to get out of Toledo year after year, was underwhelming based off of the resources they had at the MAC. But what I will say about Jason Candle, when he was at Toledo, love to punch up, right? One of the best underdogs against the spread in college football the last like 5 or 6 years, the Toledo Rockets. How about this spot? You've got UNC in UNC on Halloween will be taking on Miami at home. Then on November 14th, they'll take on Louisville. In the middle, Bill Belichick's got to go back to his old stomping grounds, sort of, and take on UConn. They got to go on the road to the Rent November 7th. I will happily take those points with the Huskies in a weird-ass spot in early November, because Jason Candle, all he does or did was underachieve as a favorite but overachieve as an underdog. So November 7th, UConn, UNC at the Rent. That place is going to have hundreds of maybe even 1,000 people inside that stadium.
With former Tennessee four-star quarterback Jake Merklinger.
Yeah.
Calling the shots here. All right. Can I give you a couple games that actually rise to the level of what you're asking? Because I'm listening to what you're saying. And these are all great answers. I love you guys. I have the best answers for these. Okay. As you know, Tim, because I know you listen to the show, and Dan, obviously you help with the show. You know what I'm about to say. We have look ahead spots where there's a bigger game on deck. We have letdown spots where you just played a bigger game than the one you're about to play. And then we have letdown look-ahead sandwich games, which is a lower-profile game that is wedged in the middle. I've got a collection of those for you here.
So I said UCLA, right? The UCLA Michigan.
You said UCLA.
One,
yeah. I think that's like week 12.
Yeah.
A couple that I'm interested in.
Do you want to go or do you want me to guess one? Because I have one that I
think. Go ahead. You can guess.
All right. It's not the typical sandwich situation. You know, I mentioned a couple that I liked sandwich wise. I think Michigan at Rutgers is an interesting
okay.
hoagie.
Yep, nice.
But I would say the biggest one that I think you're going to mention, and it brings back horrible, 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 horrible memories for the fans of the team from Northwest Indiana. Notre Dame plays Miami on November 7th. I believe that'll be the biggest game in over 20 years in that stadium. They also announced that their senior day game, November 21st, against SMU will also be primetime. In the middle is Boston College.
I'll tell you what. I think Boston College is going to be an absolute train wreck this year.
Now, this is a betting podcast. Now, your podcast is a little bit different. You're looking for outright upsets. That is going to be a sleepy spot. And I don't want to say Northern Illinois, but that could be a weird spot coming off of arguably the biggest game since the Bush Push game in 2005 in that stadium.
We had a Georgia game in there. We had a Jake Fromm.
Yep.
In South Bend.
So I'll say this about that game. It ended up becoming bigger because Georgia won the title that year. But if you remember back, it was like Notre Dame was like 15th and Georgia was like 17th. You know, Clemson, Notre Dame in the COVID year was huge, but you only had students there for that one. Ohio State, Notre Dame, which is the game we mentioned in the beginning of the podcast. I just think the buildup, the animosity and the potential of both those teams being undefeated has the reality of being pretty massive for Notre Dame's fan base in particular. But all right, I've interrupted. Hit us.
By the way, just on Tim's point, because I love interrupting Ty. I love when Ty gets on a roll. Like, blah, blah, blah. Boston College last season was abysmal. They go 2-10. I think
they cover again.
They finished the season covering 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Against Notre Dame too. Notre Dame, remember, it was a weird game. And Jeremiah Love had like a 99-yard touchdown run that kind of opened things up a little bit, but it was a clunker. It was a
31.5 point dogs.
Can I interrupt this? Can I interrupt now?
Yes,
go
ahead.
Are you still here?
Sorry.
Boston College hired Ted Roof to be their defensive coordinator.
That's true.
So the roof is the ceiling.
Full stop. Why? I don't even need to say anything more. It's a leaky roof. It doesn't matter where you put it up.
Slander for Boston College. Give us your spots. I have rudely interrupted. Give us your situational spots of the year.
It's your show, brother. You can interrupt
whenever
you want.
All right, go.
All right. Week 3 of interest. USC traveling cross country to square off against Rutgers a week before playing Oregon.
Like it. Like it.
Lincoln
week
Riley
five,
on the road. Yeah.
Week 5 sandwich spot. In between a game that, you remember last year was very close against South Carolina, Alabama. Won that one by 7 points, 29-22, I believe.
Late fumble.
And in between a game against South Carolina and a much bigger game against Georgia is Mississippi State at home against Alabama. I don't know what to make of Mississippi State, but Mississippi State's plucky. All right. I'm not sleeping on that one being any kind of blowout in favor of Alabama.
Well, if you listen to SEC coaches, they love talking about that power bottom that is the SEC. Ty keeps telling me that's a term. I don't know what it means. But they keep hammering the fact that the bottom of the SEC, the middle of the SEC, is elite. So
it's a gauntlet. Right?
It's a gauntlet.
We talk about the gauntlet. All right.
So I guess Mississippi State has a chance to sort of cement that.
Week 6. Tim, you mentioned the other end of this, but Iowa State at BYU. It's interesting to me because BYU gets Iowa State between a game on the road against TCU and a week before that big one against Notre Dame, which you're right to point out, it's like the biggest game at BYU in forever. Mm-hmm. So where's their head going to be at? I don't know what to make of Iowa State, but that's an interesting sandwich spot to me, I think, in between two teams that will probably be a little bit more high profile. The absolute sandwich game of the year is week 8.
Ooh, okay.
It is Wisconsin at home against USC. USC's schedule is brutal through and through. But USC gets Wisconsin between a road trip at Penn State and a home game against Ohio State. I don't know what we make of Wisconsin this year, but it's week eight. It stands to reason that if you're Luke Fickell, you got to get a big one. And this could be one of those where you've got a team at home that's maybe looking at the game the week before and certainly a bigger game in the future.
Now,
with my beloved Wisconsin Badgers.
Any opportunity to bash Lincoln Riley, I will do it.
Sure.
That said,
as will most teams at home.
Does it change your perception that there's a bye week before USC, before Wisconsin?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I think it helps, and it's not a true sandwich game the way we might label it otherwise.
Open face, is that what we call it?
Bit of an open face, yeah. Yeah. But still, with having Ohio State on deck, and I think USC will still be really good this year, despite the schedule and despite whatever we want to say about Lincoln. They should have, if nothing more, an offense like they do every year. And so there's no doubt in my mind they're going to be looking ahead to that Ohio State game. And Wisconsin's going to be in a situation this year, like in all of their big games, where they got to get some of these wins. They just have to. Otherwise, Luke Fickell's not going to be there next year. So that one to me, even though it's a little bit of an open face situation, is one that I'm looking at. And the final one that I will circle here, I won't go through my whole list. I have like 25
Please.
Of these. But the other
Podcast,
one that I'd
man,
mention,
you do whatever you want.
Week 9, North Carolina at home against Miami a week before Miami goes to Notre Dame.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what to make of North Carolina. I don't think they're going to be all that great. But we have seen Miami in situations like this before, on the road, a week before a big game. Under Mario Cristobal, we have seen time and again, they drop one of these weird games. And in the shadow of the Notre Dame game, it wouldn't surprise me if this one ends up being closer than expected.
I got an email from Chris Bacon prior to the show talking about this as a spot that he liked. So yeah, I would agree. This is the old look ahead situation there for Miami. And to your point, they always tend to find spots where they will trip up, as we saw last year, home to Louisville on a Friday night, or SMU on the road. All right, let's wrap things up here with a little draft, and I'll keep tabs on it. I randomly picked it. So we're going to do a chalk, a medium, and then two long shots for the Heisman. So Ty is going to get the first pick in the chalk section. So we're using DraftKings odds, obviously, for a betting situation. Look around, odds. But just to keep it uniform, we're using DraftKings odds. So the chalk section is 20-1 or under, and that gives us 10 options. Sam Levitt, Gunnar Stockton, Jeremiah Smith, Darian Mensah, Josh Hoover, Trinidad Chambliss, Dante Moore, Julian Sain, Arch Manning, CJ Carr. So with the first pick of the chalk Heisman draft, Ty, who do you select?
I select Darian Mensah.
Not bad.
I like Mensah. I think the Texas schedule makes it really difficult to go through that fully unscathed. I obviously love CJ Carr. I think CJ Carr is going to have a big year, but I think Mensah provides for Miami a really interesting mix of what they got previously from Cam Ward, along with what they got most recently from Carson Beck. He's somewhere in the middle, and still there's plenty of talent on offense, provided they can get their line sort of rebooted, as they've got some losses there. And, you know, it's not a perfect situation for Mensah, being so there are some losses, but I really like that roster. I think the schedule works to their favor. So I fully expect, more to the point from earlier, that Miami's going to be the team we talk about in the ACC. They should have a smooth run through it, hopefully, for the Canes, and Mensah stands to be the beneficiary of that.
All right, Dan, you get the second pick of the chalk selection. Where will you be heading?
I'm going Trinidad Chambliss. So we have age, we have dual threat, we have perhaps a suspect defense with all those transfers coming in and a lot of the playmakers from last year on their way to the NFL. And he will play in enough huge games, obviously opening the season against Louisville and getting LSU early, where he will have the opportunity to show out and perhaps, you know, establish himself as a Heisman contender relatively early, but also finish strong. We've already seen him show out against some of the best teams, like in the playoff against Georgia, against Miami. So we know he's a big game player. There's enough returning on offense when it's Deuce Alexander, Kawan Lacy's in the backfield next to him. We'll see what the new, you know, Jonte Cook is very talented, but has already been at like three different schools. I think there is something there with Trinidad Chambliss with the combination of age and ability and stage, even with having to deal with, and I looked this up, Ty, I apologize, the power bottom of the SEC. He should still be able, we'll come up with a sound, Ty, don't worry. I would take him just because of what I think his upside looks to be in those huge games, which I don't necessarily see previously with Dante Moore or Arch Manning or even CJ Carr, because he just hasn't played in those late season or playoff type games yet. So Trinidad Chambliss would be my chalk answer.
All right. So that leaves me the top of the board all available. Much to the surprise of probably everyone listening in, I am not picking CJ Carr. I'm going to go with Dante Moore. Love the wide receivers. Talent is all over the place. You bring back Evan Stewart. You still have DeCorian Moore there. Plenty of big games. You know, week one, because week one is so weak, that might be a primetime game against Boise State, right? So yeah. You have the rebuttal for a Big Ten championship as well against probably Indiana or a rematch against Ohio State. Obviously, it will be an enormous challenge November 7th on the road at Ohio State. You have USC on the road. But I think there are enough high-profile games. The talent is there. You do lose your OC, but you hired from within. There's a good rapport there. I'll take Dante Moore 10-1.
Strong running game, strong tight end, kind of new-look offensive line, and that's where he struggled last year with, you know, the pressure that Texas Tech was able to bring, obviously that Indiana was able to bring. But, you know, he's a fourth-year guy. There's something there. So there's a reason he is as high as he is, and I respect it.
All right. Medium shots. So this is 25-50-1. So they're over at DraftKings. There are, I believe, 11 options in this realm. It starts from Marcel Reed and Jaden Maiava at 25-1, and it goes to 50-1, which is Will Hammond and Rocco Becht at 50-1. Once again, these are DraftKings. Dan, you get the first pick in the medium slot.
Keelan Russell. So you're telling me I can get good number, good value with what is not officially the Alabama starting quarterback. We'll see what the line looks like. We'll see if they can run the ball at all. Receiver looks to be strong, if not a little bit unknown because of youth. And they did take some depth hits there. But track history, track record with that coaching staff, Ryan Grubb at offensive coordinator, with Kalen DeBoer at head coach, with the five-star upside physicality of Keelan Russell, I don't hate that value. I think that's taking an Alabama quarterback with the sort of talent that can be surrounding an Alabama quarterback. I think it's worth a flyer. Sure.
All right. I have the second pick in this round. I debated going with John Mateer. Last summer, I was deemed a Mateer hater. And I just was like, you know, we're kind of assuming a lot from a dude who transferred in from Washington State. I just saw enough of his passing prowess that is going to make me stay off of this bet. And maybe I'm stealing it from Ty, but I'm going to take my guy, Damon Williams, 45-1 in the medium shot range here. So give me Damon Williams, some good opportunities in the Big Ten, dual threat guy, could have some big rushing games, a little bit more on his shoulders with no Denzel Boston and Jonah Coleman, and another year and a place that he really wants to be at, right? I mean, he loved it. He doesn't always wanted to be in Seattle, never wanted to waver away from there, but 45-1 in the medium range, I'll go Damon Williams. Ty, you get the last pick here.
By the way, this could be the year Damon Williams sees over his own offensive line. Like, a lot of people are really bullish on those sight lines this year, so pay attention.
They have shorter offensive linemen. Maybe want to step back now.
They're teaching them to bend lower. They're like, use your knees. Like when you move, they're like, guys, really bend, really get low. Ty, go on.
You're telling me I can take Lenora Sellers.
You can.
Sure.
Give me Lenora Sellers. I'm looking at this list of guys. Obviously, some quality names in here, but of the ones that I think are truly Heisman caliber, who are probably a win or two away from vaulting up the board a little bit higher, Lenoris is a total package. You mentioned dual threat. Obviously, you mentioned, you know, name brand guys here playing in name brand conferences at name brand. Like, he kind of meets all of that criteria. Now, will he have an offensive line? That's ever been the question at South Carolina. The schedule is always murder. There are plenty of questions about South Carolina. I am not necessarily buying in on the Gamecocks overall, but 40-1 seems like that's going to get shorter if he gets, you know, if South Carolina goes on a bit of a run, because they do have a little bit of runway with the schedule before it gets considerably harder. And so it's not too far gone for me to look at this and say, all right, well, I could see this come down to 28-1 at some point, you know, midway through the season.
If you factor in Lenoris Sellers' yards running for his life away from the pass rush, the numbers would be incredible.
I know.
I don't know if he's going to be protected. I don't know if he's going to have an impressive roster of receivers to throw to. I don't know if he's going to have a running game. He has Kendall Briles, if that really gets you going, as a new offensive coordinator. Couldn't have been worse. So that's what you're wagering on.
All right, here we go. Long shots. We're each going to get two. We're going to go fantasy football snake style. And I will have first pick, but I want to point this out. I want to point this out. So last year, Fernando Mendoza, week two at BetMGM, 66-1. Travis Hunter, preseason, 50-1 2 years ago. And Jaden Daniels was 40-1 to win the Heisman after they lost week one to Florida State. So long shots have been coming home. So we can pretty much, we open up the board to everybody left. It starts with Bear Bachmeier and goes on. I'm going to go Devin Dampier.
You love him.
This is my guy.
Yes.
My guy. I already talked about him. Jason Beck leaves. Look, it's very important to put a lot of emphasis in bowl games. I mean, bowl games are so important in this day and age, especially when you're, you know, out, your retiring head coach leaves to go to another job about 5 days before things get ramped up in the Vegas Bowl. But I felt like against Nebraska, he kind of lived up to what I was hoping for. He completely crapped the bed against Texas Tech in a massive game, and that really sunk his opportunity to win a title or win the Heisman. But at 70-1, I can't quit him. Give me Spider-Man, Devin Dampier. All right, next up we got Ty. You get the second selection here.
I will go with Isaac Brown of Louisville.
That's not bad. He's a little guy.
Home run hitter, though.
Yeah.
Home run hitter. I think they're going to be focused on their ground game this year. There were rumors that Isaac Brown might be going elsewhere, like during the portal cycle.
250-1, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, that he might head to Texas or something. But he's staying put at Louisville. There are questions about the quarterback position. There's just not a sample size with Lincoln Kienholz. I think the schedule sets up pretty well for Louisville. I think we've pretty much established at this point that unless you are truly transcendent and above all reproach, you need to be on a semi-decent team to at least get consideration for the Heisman Trophy. And I think Louisville, at a minimum, will be that. Given where I think the offense is going to be this year, I think there will be a focus on the ground. I think he'll have an opportunity to get his. So give me Isaac Brown, deep sleeper.
All right, Dan, you get two picks. You get the old turnaround. So
I like
two
that.
Picks for Dan.
First pick is going to be Bear Bachmeier, just because of dual threat ability. He's somewhere in, what, the 60-1 range?
60. Yep, 60-1.
Bear Bachmeier, when a guy shows out as a true freshman and takes his team to a conference championship game and damn near the playoff, I don't know. I'm just into
Does
the
number
growth
47
potential.
Help or hurt his status?
Oh, great question. Personally, for me, hurts, but it's just weird enough that I assume I'm just missing something. I know that there's a reason. He ran for, what, 600-700 yards last year as a true freshman. He didn't throw a ton of touchdowns. I don't think they're going to have great receivers this year, but I think they should run the ball well enough that he'll have play action opportunities. And I actually like their tight ends. I want to say it's a USC and an Oregon transfer. So I assume they're going to go a little bit heavier to take advantage of that room. I don't know. I just think he's going to be in big games, and that if he's able to show up as, you know, a top third of the Big 12 as a quarterback, I don't know. I just think there's room to grow, and I think that's great, and I think there's a value in a Bear Bachmeyer pick. As I look at the list of other potential deep sleepers, I got to live what I got to live. You know, what's it? Living your morals, right? If I'm going to be high on Cal, and I'm going to say I'm high on true freshmen who show out and, you know, show an ability in bigger games, especially as JKS improved over the course of last year, I'm going to say Jaren, Chiave, Sangapulateli.
Love it.
Adding in a very good Rutgers receiver, adding in a good running game, the continuity of Nick Rolovich, and maybe Cal's defense is only so-so, has an ability to really throw the ball and has to be counted on as the guy. He is completely fearless going downfield, for better or for worse. He wants to make big plays. So I'm going to go JKS.
All right. So Dan has exercised his selections. Trinidad Chambliss, 11-1. Keelan Russell, 35-1. Bear Bachmeyer, 60-1. And Jaren Chiave Sangapulateli, 80-1. Ty, your last selection is who?
Drew Mestemaker, 75-1.
Good one. I considered it.
And actually, I kind of wish I could swap out my Isaac Brown pick because there was something else that popped up here in my
field of view.
So
we make up the rules. You haven't turned the card in yet. If you would like to move off of Isaac Brown, which I thought was a horrible pick at number three, you can move off. Whoever's available, 50-1 or longer, you can now take.
Ahmad Hardy's now at 100-1. Ahmad Hardy got shot.
Yeah, he got shot, man.
He got shot recently. He is rehabbing. He is walking. There is no imminent timetable for when he is going to return to football activities, but he is, when healthy, one of, if not the best backs in college football. I can only assume the reason the odds are so low is because of what transpired. So this is already a flyer. If you're doing a long shot, he's probably a better flyer than Isaac Brown, to be honest with you, even given the concerns. So let me swap out. I'll go Ahmad Hardy instead.
Got that Chip Lindsey offense coming at you.
That's right.
Como?
Let's go. Lindsey with an E. Let's go.
Yeah. All right. Ty is rolling with Darian Mensah, 12-1. Lenora Sellers, 40-1. Drew Mestemaker, 75. And Ahmad Hardy, 100-1.
So Ty's, hold on. Has Ty exclusively, who is your first pick again, Ty?
Mensah. Darian Mensah.
Darian Mensah. So that's the only pick from a team that seems like it's going to be actually good. Right?
I mean, listen, we haven't done our previews yet.
Do they give a lot of Heismans out to 6-6 quarterbacks? Drew Mestemaker, like, you're going to be, okay.
I think Oklahoma State's going to be pretty good.
That's fine. Do we see a lot of Heisman finalists from pretty good teams? I don't know.
Okay.
All right. I get the last pick. So available, I could go Aaron Filo. We talked about him extensively. I could go Kevin Jennings, still at SMU. I could go Avery Johnson, who we mentioned once upon a time. Not so my boy. I'm going to go because if they start off hot, they could kind of get a little bit on the radar here. Week one, Sunday night, they will be taking on Ole Miss in Nashville. Week three, at home against Kevin Jennings and SMU. I'm going to go with the upside of Lincoln Kienholz, 100-1. I'm a Jeff Brohm apologist. He does really good things with quarterbacks. And this is a guy that, whether we want to believe it or not, was competing with Julian Sayin. He is an unknown. He's super athletic. I will take Lincoln Kienholz, 100-1 is my selection, final pick of our Heisman Futures draft. So my four selections: Dante Moore, 10-1, Damon Williams, 45, Devin Dampier, Spider-Man, 70-1, and Lincoln Kienholz at 100-1.
So wait a second. You guys are giving me crap for taking Isaac Brown, who might be the most known quantity on that offense, but instead it's totally cool, just because you're the host, Tim, to take the quarterback, the maybe least proven skill position player on the entire offense, as your pick. The defense rests.
Just wait.
I mean,
just...
don't quarterbacks always win?
Travis Hunter won.
Okay. A lot of two-way players win. Once every 40 years, a two-way player wins. I'm just saying, I wouldn't. He wouldn't even be my first, like, in that range. I would much rather have, like, Bo Jackson there. Like, Arthur Smith wants to run, like, a heavy rushing offense, and he'll get a ton of care. Okay. Anyway.
I can't wait until December rolls around and Isaac Brown has run for, like, 3,000 yards.
Yeah, of course.
Entire hill. Well, the man's like, oh, I could have got him at 250-1.
Yeah.
All right.
He'll still come in sixth in the Heisman vote, but yeah.
Hey, a runner-up the last 2 years. Can you get running back to be runner-up? Because the runner-up has been a running back the last 2 years. Ashton Gentry
and
Jeremiah Love. So there you go. All right, boys. I've kept you for a long-ass time. Thank you so much. Solid verbal, multiple times a week. Make sure you check it out. Great content if you want college football all year long. And I have already told for this long podcast that I don't have any money in my budget to pay you guys, I will feed you when you come to Vegas. So, Dan, you are a food connoisseur. I have already told you brisket fried rice at 8 East is in your future.
What? So what else are they serving at 8 East?
Not a sponsor, could be. Asian cuisine. Not a great sponsor, could be. I love
that
line.
Are they located in a hotel or is it freestanding?
They are in the Circa. They have an original location on Fremont Street in downtown Vegas. Downtown Vegas, I tell you this, that's Dan's jam.
Would love that.
I think downtown Vegas is where Dan, that's where you guys will have a live show. I'm calling it right now.
I've heard good things about Good Pie Pizza.
Oh, yes. Very good. And Evil Pie, too.
I've heard, what is it called?
Evil Pie as well.
Evil Pie. I've also heard good things about UConn.
I haven't been there.
But Vegas has incredible food.
That is, we do have some pretty solid food. I would agree with that. Gentlemen, get out of here. Thank you so much. Much appreciated for the time, and we will talk soon.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
There they are. Ty Hildenbrandt, Dan Rubenstein. That's going to do it for our podcast. Continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks to producers Rick, Wyatt, and Ryan. I'm Tim. We'll talk to you next week on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.